slow. No. Good kid. Devil behind the wheel. Was he slow? Retarded means slow. Was he slow? No. What the hell else more do you need to know?
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. We're back with another first run bald movie tonight. We're talking about Edgar Wright's
excited.
Baby Driver. I drove 300 miles an hour to get to the studio. I got here before the movie's out. Jim Jones, what did you think of this movie?
I think this is the most entertaining movie I've seen all year.
That's a fair statement. Yeah.
It's not the best. I mean, I watched There Will Be Blood. I think there have been better movies, but this is a really entertaining movie.
Yeah, it's fun, it's stylish, it's sexy. It's got a great soundtrack. It's got some of the best stunt driving I've seen in a long, long time. With like fairly, you know, I mean, it's not gonna like scratch your Fast and Furious itch.
Sure.
But like, if you think one of the best car chases of all time was in the first Jason Bourne, then brother or sister, have I got a film for you? Because this thing is essentially filled with that kind of car chases.
Yeah.
I mean, it is chock-a-block. Like, fully half of this runtime is screeching tires.
Yeah. No, that, I mean, are there more screeching tires or hit songs in this movie?
I think they're well stocked with both.
Definitely.
I thought Ansel Elgort, who I've not actually registered as anybody before. He was in the Divergent series. He was also the lead of Fault in Our Stars, which I want to see, but I just haven't.
Yeah.
He's fucking amazing. They really missed the boat not casting this guy as a young Han Solo, because by God, he looks like a young Harrison Ford.
Okay, I can see that.
In fact, I would bet money that Edgar Wright put him in that getup because it looks so much like Han Solo from A New Hope.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it looks exactly like his pilot get up in A New Hope.
Maybe they can make him Indiana Jones.
Well, whoever
they
got.
They need a new one.
I was going to say, whoever you got slated, unless it's Harrison Ford.
And or Shia LaBeouf.
Nope. Get Shia out of there.
Oh, unless it's. Unless
Harrison
you want to bring
Ford,
him back.
And he should play. I think it's time for him to play the Indiana Jones Sr. to an Ansel Elgort type bastard. Indiana Jones, because he's good.
I belong in a museum.
He's good. John Hamm. Hamm needs to be a Bond villain, because I think I really liked the evil take on this bank robbing gangster here.
Yep. Jamie Foxx is great.
Jamie Foxx is fucking nuts. He is not to be trusted.
Maybe I don't want to say too much about some of the other actors, but Kevin Spacey also awesome.
Kevin Spacey's awesome. How he got caught up in a little bit of bullshit. There's like a little bit of bullshit in this movie that I'm going to talk about in the spoiler section.
Okay.
He was all caught up in it.
Uh-huh.
Lily James came a long way since Cousin Rose on Downton Abbey. She's the Deborah. She's the Debbie. She's real good.
Cousin Rose.
She was the Scottish cousin. I mean, I think you quit watching around that time.
Like season two. Early on in season two.
No, you made it to season three, because that's when What's-Her-Face died in childbirth.
Oh, okay.
I know more about your Downton Abbey habits than you do.
When Jessica Finley Brown died?
There you go.
For sure.
So I thought she was really... I mean, honestly, this was just a really a well-realized movie. It never stopped moving. It didn't overstay its welcome.
Mm-hmm. I will say it's not as funny as other Edgar Wright films.
Yes. But I actually think that was fitting. This movie is plenty funny for what it is.
Sure. There were some moments where I laughed, definitely. But I guess I went in expecting more funny from Edgar Wright, because he's done so much with like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Sure.
And those things are hilarious, but it very much has his signature style on it. Even though, you know, it's not as funny, but it's still funny, and it's got a ton of great action and style.
Yeah. I wish Ansel Elgort was 10 years older so he could retroactively go and replace Michael Cera in Scott Pilgrim, because he would be a hell of a Scott Pilgrim.
He would.
I just want to cast this guy in everything. He's
all right.
I mean, he's got, like, I don't know. He plays this... He plays that kind of nerdy, smooth charm the way that's like I said, he's a better Scott Pilgrim than Michael Cera. I don't know how to say it better than that.
Sure.
But there's a couple of really cute scenes where he's courting Deborah, in the movie that just are fun to watch. There's also like a amazing single take early on in this movie where my gut tells me, did you notice that there's like graffiti in the background of synchronizing the lyrics?
Yeah. I was going to leave that for spoilers, but okay.
No, I mean, it happens like the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. But it's so cool when you notice it.
I just want everyone to notice it because that adds, I feel like the degree of technical difficulty when you're matching a score in your head to the physical motions of the soundtrack and having to hit those beats.
For sure.
That was a real show off scene. A real showpiece scene.
So there are flourishes like that in this, but I also feel like he toned it down a slight bit from where Edgar Wright usually goes, because he usually gets a little more playful.
Yeah.
This is like slightly less playful in the editing and the directing, but still like totally Edgar Wright. But I think he's never been more Edgar Wright in the writing in this movie.
What do you mean by that?
This movie has music at its core, like in its DNA, and I feel like that is the movie that Edgar Wright has been trying to make for a very long time. Because you go back to like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and stuff, and they very much have music at their core. Like there will be one scene with just the perfect song, the absolute perfect song. They get all the action synchronized to the song, and I felt like Edgar Wright really just leaned into that in this movie.
Was Edgar Wright attached to Guardians of the Galaxy Once Upon a Time, or was it Ant-Man?
I don't know.
Or was it both? Because I kept on thinking as I was watching this, like, did he get called in as like an early consult to write on Guardians of the Galaxy? Because the way that that franchise has woven its music into its DNA matches a lot of... I mean, like all of his Cornetto, is it Cornetto? All of his Cornetto trilogies, of course, Scott Pilgrim, of course, is big into pop music. But yeah, had an impeccable, flawless soundtrack.
Yeah. And I think he really likes Cars, too. There's a lot of this kind of stunt driving in Hot Fuzz. There's a rather shitty but meaningful car in The World's End. So I don't know. It felt very Edgar Wright. I liked it.
Do you have any other non-spoiler things you want to share?
I don't.
We get right into the thing that everybody comes for on the bald, first run bald movies, the trailer talk. First up, Stephen King's It. I noticed for the first time that this has a screenplay credited to Cary Fukunaga.
That's weird.
That's
true. I thought he was a director.
Yeah, I thought I mean, there's nothing saying you can't do both.
Right. Edgar Wright is a perfect example.
There you go.
Right?
So, like, I mean... Is this first run bald movie material? It's directed by...
Maybe.
Did you see the horror movie Mama?
No. It's Would you believe I've never seen It either?
Yeah, because it's a shitty 90s television miniseries. Well, I imagine there's a lot of those that 90s? We jointly haven't seen.
I thought there was a movie It.
I don't think so. It was. No? I'm pretty sure it's an ABC miniseries.
Hmm.
Okay. I've not read the book either, so I don't know anything about this other than Tim Curry is a clown. Supposed to be scary.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling
scary
it.
Scary clown.
I don't see the scary clown.
Yeah, I've never had the scary clown gene.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not bragging. There's nothing particularly noteworthy about not being scared of clowns.
Yeah.
I know it's a deep-seated, I hear it's a deep-seated psychological fear with people. Mm-hmm. I don't think clowns are funny.
No, they're not funny and they're not scary.
No, they're just, unless you're trying to keep a guy from getting gored with by a bull, you're just probably a useless addition to whatever you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, juggling.
Yeah.
If you can really just have those
pins in the air.
You
can juggle without the fucking grease paint on.
It's true, and I'm still just as impressed.
Yeah. You're just, you know, I think after Insane Clown Posse came and blew up your spot.
Really cornered the clown market.
All y'all clowns should have moved on.
Cornered and really just shit all over the place.
That's
too.
What like, I'm saying. Yeah. There was no spot left after they blew it up. It's gone. It's the Bikini Atoll. Abel Baker happened. You need to move the fuck on. Speaking of moving the fuck on, another Stephen King, Dark Tower.
Wait.
Yes.
But before we move off it. This kid who's playing like the oldest of the group is going to grow up to be the Plague from Hackers, right? That I think his name's Fisher Stevens.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You remember the guy that in Always Sunny that they take hostage, the newspaper guy?
No, I don't.
Or the reviewer, the bar critic?
I don't remember.
It's him.
I watched like five seasons of Always Sunny in like a two-month period. So
that's true.
They all kind of melt together. We didn't answer the question. Is it a fucking first run bald movie or not?
When does it come out?
September.
September?
I don't think we've set her September yet.
I just don't have the love for it that a lot of people do. I think we're going to do it a disservice.
But we can come in fresh eyes. Like if it doesn't appeal to us, then what the fuck is it doing?
Yeah, okay.
We will be the clowns to blow up its spot. Stephen King Part 2, Dark Tower. I think this looks amazing. The thing I was slightly disappointed is I'm given to understand that this is more like Dark Tower fan fiction. This is a movie inspired by the lore characters and setting of the Dark Tower, not a retelling of the gunslinger from the Dark Tower itself, which means nothing to me because it's on my list of things to read.
Mm-hmm.
And it always seems like it's got stone cold badass quotes when people are throwing them back and forth on Reddit. That shit about forgot to face your father seems pretty fucking righteous.
Yep.
It's got Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey in it as good and evil fighting. Like, I feel like this is a first run bald movie.
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
I mean, it's a little. I mean, I'm predisposed to like Idris Elba gunning fools down with a wheel gun.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the gun effects where he's doing the fancy reload are not quite doing it for me.
Yeah, a little too underworld. Maybe.
Yeah, a little too, like, you're not really selling the fluid. It's more like, you know, I'm just watching the CGI do its thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I feel you. Also, the quotes, like, there were some awesome quotes, but not sure how I feel about, I don't kill with my gun, I kill with my heart.
Hey, man.
I don't eat with a spoon, I eat with my fingers.
With a spork.
Or something,
he
yeah.
He eats with a spoon has forgotten the face of his father.
It was a little cheesy, but. I'll go with it.
Boy, that's the badass quotes I was talking about. So, bald move, viciously disagreeing about the badassness of quotes. Moving on, a Julia Roberts remake, Flatliners.
Yeah. So I thought immediately this turned me off.
It looks a lot less. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen the original Flatliners, but I remember it being a lot more thriller, a lot less supernatural.
Right. See, I never saw the original Flatliners.
This looks a lot more supernatural, a lot less.
It does, yeah.
Thriller.
And they actually re-hooked me once they went supernatural with it, like full supernatural, because I was thinking, like, what are you doing with this? Are you getting superpowers from dying?
Yeah.
Is that what's happening?
Exactly what's happening.
And I was going to call bullshit on the whole thing, and then they started going supernatural. I'm like, all right, this is just a horror movie.
All right.
So I'm back in.
I don't know. I feel like that it's another one of these movies that are borderline ruined by the trailer, because I felt like it took you beat for fucking beat.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how it resolves, but I also don't really give a shit, because some of the young, attractive people probably live. Some of them probably die. Some of them probably scarred for life. Don't really care. Not a first-run bald movie, in my opinion. Also not a first-run bald movie, Pitch Perfect 3.
No, God, no.
I've seen the first two. They're fine for what they are. I will wait for this to come out on TiVo or whatever the fuck it is.
I will continue to not watch the Pitch Perfect series.
On demand. All right, here's a nice toss-up. Kingsman 2.
This is interesting.
The first Kingsman I was really feeling until they made a couple bizarre choices that we've talked about before. This trailer looks fucking righteous. Whoever decided to score it to Frank Sinatra's My Way should get a goddamn raise, because that was really cool.
Yeah. No, it is. I look at the screen and I can't help but wonder, how is this lead actor not Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because he looks exactly like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
He's a Coxney Levitt.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know, German or something.
Is he?
Or Icelandic, I don't know.
All right. Also, how did Colin Farrell died in the first one? He's coming back. He comes back with an eye patch. I guess they make that. First of all, fuck's sake, if you're only going to show him for like 2 seconds, why spoil the reveal for the three Kingsman fans out there? They do give it a little bit of like a what the fuck in the trailer, but I'm so sick and tired. Kingsman 2 might be a first-run bald movie. We'll have to see how stiff the competition is. Thor Ragnarok, Exhibit B. Why the fuck do you spoil the fun Hulk cameo?
Oh, yeah.
Like that's going to be 3 minutes in a movie that land like a fucking turd. Yep. Like a pelican turd just splashing on your head, because we've seen it. We're waiting for it. there's going to probably be 15 yep. minutes of lead up, like, oh my God, here goes Chris. He's getting his hair cut. He's getting his buzz cut. He's been captured by...
He's getting his face paint.
Yep, he's been captured by the fly guy. He's and like, come on, why are you doing this, man?
I'm curious to see
everyone in the fucking world's going to see this movie. Yeah. You don't need Hulk to get our asses true. In the seats.
They should have not put out a trailer. It should have just been Thor Ragnarok.
Well,
I think the letters on the screen.
Thor is one of the few Marvel movies that needs a trailer to get it from 700 million to a billion. Okay,
yeah.
So, and the Mouse Wants is extra 300 million. All right, I get that.
Okay.
I get that, but you know, the Immigrant Song would have got you there.
Yeah, for sure.
And I still think this looks like super cosmic and trippy and fun. I just wish they hadn't spoiled the Hulk.
That's I'm curious a real to see the power that can stop a god, can smash a god's hammer. I don't know what kind of power that is, but
it's it's Kate Blanchett, who looks amazing in this film.
She's like 100 years old in real life, isn't she?
She's pushing 50.
She looks a lot younger than that in this.
Well, all
sure.
she has to do is grab a hammer. I mean, compare her to Charlize Theron and Atomic Blonde, and she's just like in an old folks' home.
Yeah.
Thor Ragnarok probably a first round ball movie. American Assassin. What do you think of that? That's the one with Michael Keaton as the, I'm sure, some kind of Navy SEAL CIA mentor of some angry guy whose sweetheart was killed by terrorists on vacation. Now he wants to take down the whole cell single-handedly. I don't know.
I'm curious where they're going with that one.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see what the message of this is.
Right.
Like, is he going to be Batman? Are we supposed to... like, root for him to go kill people who kill people? Because, I mean, I guess maybe if the bad people are bad enough and the good people are fighting the right fight.
I mean, honestly,
but
if
like,
they come and shoot the guy's girl up, that's I'm in.
Right, but I wonder what the larger message is going to be here.
Yeah.
That's my only fear, is that they're going to go somewhere where I don't agree with him.
Yeah, and I don't...
And it's going to spoil it.
I don't know. When did this start to becoming a thing in movies? Because I feel like no one gave a shit when Rambo was shooting up communists, you know?
Right.
Like, there is a little bit of, like, terrorism fatigue.
Well, I feel like when I'm fed propaganda, I'm not interested.
Well, I mean...
when I'm obviously fed
Rambo
propaganda.
Rambo and Rocky is super propaganda. I'm just saying that, like, was that because that was more of an existential kind of... But unlikely threat, the whole Cold War, and like the fact that we actually see people being butchered on the streets makes it a little bit unappetizing for.
I guess I just don't want them to go too black and white with this.
Okay,
honestly, like that's my fear, is that they say there's a solution to this,
and it's
guns
it's
and Michael
getting
Keaton.
Getting a 17-year-old American under the hands of Michael Keaton,
right?
Yeah, and that's all the trailers we had.
Okay.
That's enough trailers. And here is, unfortunately, the part where we have to drop the non-club members off the curb.
Okay, spoiler time. Let's start off with the early scene. So I kept watching this movie hoping that they would do a car chase scene that really blew me away. And I think the closest they came is that first car chase scene.
I don't know, because for my money, the stunt involving the two trucks, the truck... with the G.I. Joe guy, the all-American dude with the fucking fully automatic submachine gun on his dash. That's American as apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
Him driving baby's SUV underneath a semi at speed.
Yeah.
And it looked like a practical effect. That really blew me away.
That was cool. Yeah. I guess that one was good. But like as far as... extended car chase scenes go, I felt like the first one was maybe the best, and I wish they had...
It had them...
hit me at the end with an even better one.
I feel you, because I don't think there's anything better than that, like, reverse S-car curve that they pulled off in a fucking alleyway.
Yeah.
And I noticed that they didn't show the end of that scene. They cut... because I'm betting that the stunt guy fucking stuffed it.
Yeah, probably.
And they're like, fuck it, we've done this 3 times, that's the best one, let's go.
That's all the cars we got.
That was so sick that, and honestly, I thought the truck thing was a signature move in the same way, and they never really built, like, I thought that there would be, each one would have a kind of signature thing for its set piece.
Yeah.
And it didn't. It wasn't sustainable.
Which is not to say that, you know, I wasn't cheering the whole time and loving it, but...
I felt like Edgar Wright wanted that guy's parkour routine at the end to kind of be that thing, and I think it could have been, it just needed to be more. Like,
Yeah.
They spoiled him like running full tilt on the picnic tables in the fucking trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed like three or four more beats that awesome.
Yep.
For me to feel fully, because guy felt like he's running a million miles an hour. It was good.
Yeah, the foot chases are actually just as impressive as the car chases.
And I liked how it kicked off with like just because by that time I was fucking done with Jamie Lee Foxx's character.
When he
flipped off the airbag and ran him right in that rebar, which should have seemed obvious what he's going to do.
That's the two-headed Siamese twin of Jamie Foxx and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Uh-huh.
Jamie Lee Foxx.
Oh, did I do that? God damn it. Jesus Christ. All right. Well, anyway, yeah, that's what happened.
Jamie Foxx was great in this. He was playing the asshole. That's what he was trying to do.
Could have been a love child between Tommy Lee Jones.
That's true. Yeah.
And Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. And Jamie Foxx.
And Jamie. It's some kind of crazy ass three-way. Yeah. Triple headed.
But I also, in that first chase scene, I really love the move they pull with those red cars. Where he like kind of spots out of the corner of his eye, just happens to be two red cars driving side by side. He pulls up in the middle and then switches places with one.
Yeah.
But yet, this movie has like a relentless feeling of the cops are always there.
Yeah.
Like he, no matter how many awesome stunts or crazy ass turns he pulls, he never quite gets away from the cops.
Which I thought that actually, the whole movie. That felt real. Like you're in downtown LA, you're in downtown Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to get away with the cops. All you can do is buy enough space to get a diversion and then swap out cars and take off. That felt pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the hook. You know, like I thought that very economical way to tell us this kid's relationship with music.
Yeah.
You know, it established some real pathos for him in like a minute of flashback material, which I thought was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They also, just by the sheer force of the charisma of the leads, I felt like they sold the baby Deborah love story. That's the thing that really sells it. These are kids.
Sure.
Like I don't buy John Hamm rolling into the diner and falling for the first blonde that comes off the blonde truck.
Uh-huh.
I do buy that this kid would,
mm-hmm.
Especially since she's bopping to a beat and like you know that they seem to like hit it off immediately. I young love. What are you gonna do? It's powerful enough to make.
It makes you crazy things.
It makes you do things like, you know, if you're Frank Underwood, you just, if you're Kevin Spacey, you just fucking give up your life of successful, high-end, high-concept bank robber facilitator money guy and just get your shot off shoddy and go to work.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright has to know that's stupid and makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think he just got to that part in the script and had that situation as like, you know what? Fuck it. Either the audience is with me at this point or they're not. Because I allowed it. I kind of like, all right, fine. I'll allow it. And he did make it awesome.
That's the thing about Edgar Wright. I allow a lot with that guy because he's having fun. I'm having fun. Not everything has to make sense. And like, you know, in most places where I would call bullshit on the chance or the coincidence of something, I just let it slide right by because it's Edgar Wright, and he's just enjoying it.
I didn't think there was that many. Like, I felt like this is, like, one of the tightest things he's ever plotted. That was just that just really stood out as not being even half-baked.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just, and I guess I kind of admire that if that's the only thing in the film and you're going to go for broke by just having Kevin Spacey buy it as hard as you possibly can, like, he gets shot with a shotgun. Yeah. He gets shot with a shotgun again. He gets ran over. He gets Brad Pitted in Meet Joe Black, and then he gets fucking ran over again.
Yeah,
and like okay,
no, he got it bad, but he's got so it pretty good. Bad. There's a scene kind of early on. I think it's the second heist that they're pulling where he's up at the chalkboard talking to Jamie Foxx. I think
given just exposition.
Yeah, just telling him about Baby Driver's background, right, uh-huh. And why he listens to music all the time. And at the end of that monologue, he turns around and he says something like, and while I've been explaining that to you, I drew an entire fucking map. Isn't that fucking amazing?
It is, because like you can't do it. Like I've spent my time on a whiteboard. If someone's trying to have an unrelated conversation, fuck doing any kind of diagramming or notes. I thought that was really funny. I also loved. like there's a lot of complex wordplay there when they're introducing like Flea and he's got a missing nose, a prosthetic nose, and Jamie Lee Foxx is like, "What happened to your nose, man?" He goes, "Oh, that's a no-nose, no-no right off the bat."
Right.
And then he acts like this Asian gentleman, like what his specialty, and Kevin Spacey says he puts the Asian in Home Invasion.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, pretty strong. The no-nose, no-nose Asian Home Invasion came like rapid fire, and I was I was rolling at that point.
Yep, that was pretty good.
That was really fun.
And then a lot of stuff, like we mentioned.
I really liked watching Baby Driver just fuck around with audio gear. Coincidentally, I've been watching this YouTube series of this guy who's inventing this way to like essentially scratch tape.
Mm-hmm.
Like he spools up the tape and he took apart like, you know, one of the sea kids, and he can just move it up and down and do like all this kind of complicated crossfade and play both sides of the tape. And you just watch him on YouTube just make these crazy beats with just like these really simple verbal loops. Yeah. So like I was primed to like, oh, I see, he's recording, you know, this thing on a magnetic strip on a card so he can mix. I thought that the fact that he actually creates his music is kind of neat. I wish they did more with that. Because when the guy said, "Don't you want to bring joy in people's hearts?" I'm like, "Yeah, you should be fucking a DJ or something."
Uh-huh.
And he's driving
a pizza.
Delivering pizzas?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I suppose it's a good job for somebody who can drive fast. We did mention how, you know, there was like graffiti and stuff in the background, but also one thing we didn't talk about is the choreography that goes along with that. Like all the gunshots kind of line up with the beats and the songs.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool.
It's too bad because like one third of the movie, Baby stops having fun with this because some of the most joyful stuff in the movie was him.
Yeah.
You know, like his life lining up to the soundtrack and him doing the elaborate choreography and like, you know, tapping at the drum beats and doing like the all that stuff was just really cool.
Yeah, when he was a little more carefree.
And then, like I said, the Kevin Spacey character just fundamentally doesn't fucking make sense.
Yeah.
Because he says he's got these rules where he doesn't use a different crew every single time, and then he violates everything on the last job, which I don't get.
Yeah.
They needed a third act.
I mean, it's
so they gave you one by breaking every rule in the fucking movie.
Just one more job.
Yeah.
One more job. That's the one that always gets you, you know, the last job is always
the one. Especially like he doesn't, that's the other thing is like, well, he didn't want it. Like there's the other thing that kind of nagged me throughout the whole movie is like, why didn't Baby just split that night? Like, I'll see you in the morning. I'm out. Like, take your dad. Take your stepdad or foster dad, throw him in a nursing home with the 60-70 grand you got. Take Hot Deborah and hit the fucking bricks, man. Go, gone, ghost.
Yeah, I mean the
because once,
the night that he gets clear.
Once this guy pulls this like, well, are you in or you're out, and like you can choose no, and then he says you can't.
Yeah,
he's going to keep doing that forever and ever and ever. And there was no like, and part of it is like, okay. You know, Baby, I can't be too hard on Baby for not being savvier because, again, he's just a kid. But there's a couple points in the movie where it seems like if he was a little bit quicker on his feet or a little bit more decisive, he could have avoided all this shit.
So I get what you're saying. I'm going to try and play devil's advocate. I would say maybe he was not in a strong enough relationship at that point to just bolt and take the waitress with him. Like, their relationship develops over the course of the movie, right? Before they finally try and go on a road
trip. I mean, you might be right, but I didn't think it developed between him saying, "I'll see you tomorrow night," to showing up with his crew.
No,
like,
I don't think
there was any, like, the last kind of really bonding experience they had was going to the best wine and then dine in Atlanta.
Yeah. That's true.
Apparently, there's a place called Bacchanal there.
Okay.
Or Bacchanal, as I like to call it. I don't know. I'm worried that this movie's going to hold up on rewatches. Although it could be that once you get over all that rough road and you know it's ahead, then it's just going to be even more enjoyable the second time.
Yeah, could be.
Because I did find there was a lot of tension in me just trying to figure out where the fuck they were going, because it seemed like where they should go and where they were going was at odds sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Not in like a distracting way, just like I kind of wish this was a little bit more formulaic so I could enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm not sure. In some ways, this movie felt like it was a little bit of a reaction to Driver, which I okay. didn't. I did not like that movie.
No,
I'm like the
I
only
did.
Person in the yeah. fucking world that didn't. But I thought that was a triumph of style over substance.
I might not disagree with that actually,
and not even that appealing a style for me personally. I know that's subjective,
okay.
but
yeah.
so I kind of liked a little bit that was a. I think this played a little bit of a parody of that.
Interesting. Yeah, I wasn't thinking about that at all while I was watching it. I was kind of looking more for the Edgar Wright-isms, honestly.
Yeah.
Well,
that's part of his deal, though. He does lampoon movie types.
Yeah, that's true. For sure.
Like, I mean, I'm not sure what he was lampooning with the World's End, but, you know, Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, like, obviously those are sinned up
yeah.
buddy cop films and zombie movies, respectively.
Totally.
So, like, this could be, like, his, like, reaction to Transporter and Driver and Fast and Furious and all that kind of stuff.
Italian Job.
The Italian, exactly,
like,
exactly.
All those things.
All those things.
I did really like the ending. There were two occasions where they came really, really close to hitting on the perfect song, like they have in past Wright movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think the moment where they steal the Challenger was like that. I was ready. I was pumped. Let's fucking do this.
Mm-hmm.
And they cut that scene so short that I was a little disappointed by it, honestly.
Yeah.
And then the final scene, you know, after he's got his ears blown out and they're driving out toward that bridge where his mom's tape is playing, I thought that was like a perfect moment too.
Uh-huh.
And they cut that one short. And I'm like,
and it was
well,
also
God damn it, I wanted to revel in this.
That he had his, I thought what they're going to go with is that the double gunshot to the ears cured his tendonitis.
Oh.
Like, it's going to be the trope of, like, you know, you knock someone on the head, they forget things, and you knock them on the head, and their memory jars. But no, like, the ending was a little bit more depressing than I thought it would be. But I guess
it was bittersweet, right?
The argument is, I guess this guy owes a debt to society because he did a lot of bad things.
And that's why I think they don't let him just get away, like, right off into the sunset with his girl.
Right.
I think he's got to go to prison and serve those 5 years for any sense of justice to have been done.
Right.
But I think it's a really bittersweet moment where he's writing, he can't hear his mom's tape, right? And then
right.
he does the same thing that
his foster father
liked to
did,
do,
yeah.
Where he puts his hand on the speaker and then it just comes into full clarity. I know it doesn't work like that, but
no.
For the purpose of this movie, I thought it was perfect.
I don't know. I saw Mr. Holland's Opus. I think it works exactly
yeah.
like that. Yeah.
Man.
Richard Dreyfuss, he explains it all.
Only one way to find out.
I do, and that also made, because I thought that having his foster dad be a black man who's deaf was just a little bit of like a stunt.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Which I guess it is, but it also is plot relevant because it also explained how he eventually, I guess, is going to relearn how to enjoy that. Like, the other thing is, like, I don't know that would permanently deafen a person.
I don't know.
I wouldn't want it done to me.
Prison doctors tried to help him, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it perfectly, it says so much about who his true parents were, honestly. Like, his dad was an asshole. Top to bottom, you could see it.
Uh-huh.
He loved his mom, and he loved this guy, you know, his foster father. So I think, I don't know, I thought it was really, really strong.
I did too,
end.
But you said bittersweet, and I guess I kind of wished it was more sweet.
Yeah.
Because it harshed the buzz. I had a pretty good buzz going for the rest of the film, and that the last couple minutes brought me down a bit.
Yeah.
Especially since they were telling me with, like, all these character witnesses coming forward and sending me a lie. Like, I thought, I mean, you're right. They can't
oh, he's got a good heart. Okay,
yeah,
fine. Uh-huh. You're free to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wouldn't. But on the other hand, if you're going to pull that shit with Kevin Spacey, why can't you do it at the end to give me my ultimate happy ending?
Oh, have Kevin Spacey come out?
Yeah, because like no. I'm just
he's
saying
the world's best driver.
There you go.
And he's
there
got
you
a heart of gold.
He's in a full body cast, and he can only talk.
He lived.
Yeah, yeah. He's got like some kind of that those weird like you know mechanical voices things because his voice
they,
box.
They
has
hook
been
him
exploded.
Up to a vocoder, and all he can do is talk like T-Pain.
Yeah, and then the baby driver gets up there and starts remixing it.
Perfect. I love it.
Is he slow?
He's held in contempt.
So I don't know. I feel like that if you're going to call bullshit on your own movie, then maybe do it one more time. So you, because I wanted a fun summer film, and I got a fun summer film with a bit of a downer ending.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he does eventually ride off into the sunset,
right? With a woman he met as a late teenager, and they're totally different people now. And she spent 5 years of her prime pining after this guy in jail, and she's going to learn that he's kind of a turd.
Yeah, and his music is not that good.
And it's not that good.
It's all right,
and he's a driver, but that's actually not a vocation that's going to get you anywhere. Yeah. And like, she's just been getting by barely, paycheck to paycheck. She saved up and bought this badass caddy or whatever the hell it was at the end.
Yeah,
and, like, it's just. As soon as this credits go, I mean, this relationship is going to fly apart. It's a downer, I'm telling you. Young love, and they're teenagers, and they're going to take to the highway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mid-20s, right. That's when the dream dies, baby.
There is one scene that I really thought it didn't do it for me.
Uh-huh.
And it's maybe because I saw John Wick 2 recently. Mm-hmm. But that scene where the butcher is laying out the pork cuts, I'm like, dude, I saw this done much better just 3 months ago.
Do you think that was the point? Like,
it might have been, but I don't know. I thought they were trying to be cool with it, but
I thought, and the fact that like Jamie Foxx is blue. I mean, that's the other thing is like he was such a mad dog. I don't understand why someone as careful as Kevin Spacey would have ever agreed to work with him, let alone bring him back twice. Like, if you're going to get a crew together and get fucking John Bernthal, get the Punisher back with the rest of the AMC crowd and go clean house. I like Don Draper. I like whoever the hell Don Draper's Monica, was that
Monica.
Her name?
Yep.
Darlin. Mm-hmm. That was a cool crew. Like, get Jamie, you know. And do you think he cut a man's finger off and bronzed it?
Wow, are you making this up? Or
no, he has a gold like middle finger hanging from his chain.
Oh no, I thought this was a line in the movie that I missed. Okay, no, I didn't see it.
I know, I was trying to think, like, is it his finger and he's just flipping someone off all the time? Or like, there's so much about his character and their interesting tattoos that I want to know more about.
I did think it was cool.
He was the worst.
The worst?
Jamie Foxx.
Oh, Jamie Foxx, yeah.
Jamie Lee Foxx.
Yeah, he was an asshole, a hothead, a wild card, some might say.
Yeah.
Which he played really well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He didn't suck. His character did.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of like that they did that reveal at the end with Baby not actually being Baby's real name.
Miles.
That was kind of cool, yeah. Because they had me. You know, I thought Baby was his real name the
Why
whole time.
Wasn't it? Why was he using his handle, his street handle, everywhere?
I think it was a tribute to his mom. I think when he says, when she says, oh, did your mom call you Baby? He's like, sometimes. She probably called him that all the time, is my guess.
Yeah. I'm wondering, because I feel like most of the Edgar Wright movies, all of them, are very rewatchable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I could watch them 1 or 12 times, and I'd still enjoy myself. I'm very curious to see what kind of life this thing has on, video, home video release. The fuck?
When it hits
Blockbuster. I'll see how it does
on Blockbuster.
When it comes
out on magnetic Betamax. Strike cards.
Betamax. I guess, fuck. It's late.
Streaming.
Stream it. Yeah. I don't know. I wonder how well it'll hold up to that. Also,
probably pretty well.
Have you? I mean, I looked at reviews before I sat down to the movie. Mm-hmm. I don't usually do that, but I was really nervous about this one. Mm-hmm. And the reviews are very good.
Okay, cool.
So this movie probably will make a ton of money. Holy shit, 98% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, according to this thing. That's insane.
Yeah.
So there's really nothing kind of like it on the market right now. Like, it's far enough away from Fast that's not, I mean, I guess that could steal its thunder a little bit, but I don't know. This movie's probably going to do, it wouldn't surprise me if it's the biggest hit that Edgar Wright's had.
Yeah, could be.
Because I remember Scott Pilgrim being considered a bit of a disappointment.
Mm.
It was like a big nerd movie and had a lot of Comic-Con buzz, and it just...
It's pretty niche-y.
Yeah. You know? Great movie, though.
Yeah, for sure.
In fact,
my favorite movie for a while.
Yeah. All right. I got nothing else. Do you got anything else you want to talk about?
Nope. I think that's it.
All right.
Our next first run movie is going to be Spider-Man: Homecoming on the 7th.
Yes, that will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah.
After seeing the preview of Spider-Man in Avengers, or in Captain America.
Uh-huh. I also think that Marvel has, uncharacteristically, a lot riding on this, because I hear that post Phase 4, which is after, like, you know, the next Avengers, and they do away Thanos and all that, that this is, like, you know, Spider-Man's going to be what they rebuild around.
Hmm.
So
okay.
If this movie sucks, that is going to be, you know, I like paying attention to meta conversation around superhero films. Also, you know, because I am getting a little tired of the superhero films.
You are?
Yeah. Mm. Like, I'm still enjoying them, but not as much as, and because just so goddamn many of them.
There are.
And also, like, there's a lot of, you know, people are talking that, like, it's kind of like The Mummy was a fucking superhero film. Like, it's starting to infect everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we need that kind of sensibility everywhere we look.
Yeah. It's like, I would compare superhero movies to the formula for Assassin's Creed.
Mm.
Like, how they had, you know, towers and all these different checkpoints on the open world map. Like, that kind of feels the same as these formulaic sort of superhero movies.
Yeah, and I think that I hope that they continue to adapt. Like, for example, Logan was as much of a Western, a spaghetti Western, as it was a superhero film. If they keep doing that, then they can keep it fresh. But the big budget, international success, tentpole movies, I don't know how many. And maybe I'm just getting too, I'm also getting fucking old, too old for this shit. you know, because Marvel could very well, and the mouse could very well, it's like, we had you for a decade. Time for you to get to move on, fucker.
Baby
your
driver
spot's been blown up.
Go
shuffle off with the clowns. We got a whole other cash crop. They're born right now.
Yeah,
they're shaking their rattle. They're going to be ready for Spider-Man and his Phase 5. And I'm like, okay,
totally.
All right. The other thing is, like, I feel like, if they're going to, this is like really inside nerdy talk, but Marvel keeps bumping up against the fact that they sold a lot of rights to franchise stuff to Sony.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to go bigger than Thanos, you go Galactus. But he's part of the Silver Surfer Fantastic Four franchise that Sony still owns.
Which also sucks hardcore.
Yeah, and I was looking in his forum where they're going down, like, the big bads in the Marvel Universe, and a lot of them are tied up, like the Skree, a lot of them are tied up in that Sony contract. And, like, man, they had to open up a lot of vault to get Spider-Man back. I think it would be in everyone's best interest if Marvel Studios and Disney eventually acquired the X-Men and Silver Surfer and Fantastic Four and all those properties.
Maybe Disney can just buy Sony. That'll solve the problem.
They might, I mean, because, like, Disney is this fucking juggernaut of a company, and then they bought Marvel, and then they bought Lucasfilm, and then they flipped the assets into billion-dollar films that just never stop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of, I mean, I don't know, like, Mickey Mouse is going to go into public domain in, like, the next 2 years. I feel like the mouse is going to buy Congress, too. It's for sale. To slap cash on the barrel, bam.
Yeah, but honestly,
done.
Who gives a fuck about Mickey Mouse, right? I know they're fighting for more than Mickey Mouse. It's not not about Mickey. It's about, you know, preserving the copyright law essentially indefinitely so that all of their other stuff as well is covered.
Right.
But, like,
which is still bullshit.
Yeah, totally.
Although, maybe another way to look at this is the mouse saw it coming, and he diversified into Iron Man, and
they got that for 90 years.
Yeah, so fuck it. I'm making money coming and going, bitch.
Yeah, why not?
You don't think the mouse talks like that, but he does. He's a gutter rat when you get him in the negotiation room.
Yep.
That's it for Baby Driver. We'll be back in 2 weeks for Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be a fun one. See you then.